Thank you, everybody, for coming this evening, and thank you, Sunshine, for the introduction and for being a part of organizing this event. And I certainly want to thank also Doug Noble for extending the invitation to me. I appreciate that. I'm very pleased to be here at RIT, and in particular, addressing an audience, you know, like this. And I want to thank my fellow panelists for helping to make this event what I think it'll be, an engaging event. About 3 years ago, over in Syracuse, we started hearing that the Reaper drone was coming to Hancock Air Base, and that the Hancock had become the national maintenance center for the Reaper. Since then, we've heard that Hancock is actually piloting Reapers over Afghanistan. Hancock is the home of the 174th Fighter Wing of our local New York Air National Guard. The Hancock military base is on the northern edge of Syracuse, separate from but contiguous to Hancock International Airport. Some here may not be familiar with the Reaper drone. A drone is an unmanned robotic vehicle, whether on land, sea, or in the air. The Reaper drone is an ultra high-tech unmanned aircraft, a whole new level of robotic aerial warfare. The Reaper is a high-flying, long-flying, fuel-efficient, 36-foot-long robot. It's also a sharpshooting, lethal device that the Pentagon proudly describes as a hunter-killer. Check out the terminology. Hunter-killer, Reaper, so forth. And it's very menacing technology, nomenclature. Hunter-killer means that the drone is used for both surveillance and assassination. The Reaper is armed with Hellfire missiles and 500-pound bombs. Although it is unmanned, the Reaper is launched by a ground crew, often mercenaries, over there. It's sometimes, you know, clandestine airstrips. But once the Reaper is airborne, it's piloted via satellite link by a technician using a joystick at a computer console. Generally, the technician is on the ground here in the U.S., thousands of miles from any target. Targets include vehicles, buildings, and human beings, especially in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, but also elsewhere. The Reaper has extraordinary surveillance capabilities. Its camera can see, record, and transmit from several miles in the air. These cameras can see at night, they can see through clouds, they can distinguish children from adults, even at great heights. These camera systems send back vast amounts of real-time imagery to the pilot back at Hancock, or at any of the five other Reaper bases throughout the US. In nearby Rome, former Rome Air Base, Rome, New York, ultra-high tech computer PlayStations are being developed to help process all this imagery. In 2008, former Republican Congressman James Walsh hailed the arrival of the Reaper locally. Jim Walsh said that Reaper pilots will be, quote, literally fighting a war in Iraq and at the end of the shift, playing with their kids in Camillus. Camillus being a western suburb of Syracuse. Walsh was succeeded by Congressional Rep Dan Maffei, who lost the election last November. Dan, though he originally was elected as an anti-Iraq war candidate, also supported the Reaper in our midst. Senator Chuck Schumer, according to his February 10th press release, wants to expand Hancock's role as a Reaper hub. Schumer says he is, quote, committed to working in overdrive to ensure that Hancock is chosen as a drone test site, unquote. This past Friday, March 25th, U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand visited Hancock. She was personally briefed on the Reaper by Colonel Kevin Bradley, the commander of the 174th. The next day, Syracuse Post-Standard quoted Gillibrand as saying, "This technology will save lives." The Reaper, she said, quote, "can do so much to support the men and women on the ground, giving them the intelligence to make sure they do their job effectively," unquote. Now, before I go on to talk about how grassroots folks across upstate New York, in contrast to their elected representatives, are responding to the Reaper, I want to say a few words about why the Reaper is no friend to any of us. I want to explain why the Reaper does more to jeopardize lives than save them. The key thing to realize here is that, yes, this new gee whiz technology is tactically clever. And within narrow contexts, in fact, can save certain lives. Since the Reaper has no crew on board, there's no one to get hungry or sick or tired or captured. There is no pilot or navigator or gunner to be shot down or die in a crash or collision. This, of course, means no awkward body bags coming back to the U.S. Body bags that force us to ask, how much blood are we willing to pay for our insatiable appetite for oil? Now, compared to, say, an F-16 fighter jet, the Reaper is pretty cheap, maybe $10 million a pop. A corporation out in San Diego, General Atomics Inc., can produce the Reaper relatively quickly, and it can be disassembled and readily containerized for transport overseas via cargo plane, ship, or truck. Unlike a manned fighter jet, the Reaper can hover high over a target, invisibly and unheard, for hours at a time, waiting for the right moment. Its ordnance is laser-guided for extreme accuracy. Its kill radius is small. In other words, if a Reaper targeted you folks down there in the corner of the room, we up here on the panel would probably remain unscathed. Such capability is ideal for extrajudicial executions that the Reaper is so often used for. Although there's no courage involved in deploying the Reaper, in fact, some might suggest that their use is cowardly, it's understandable why the Pentagon sees drone technology as the wave of the future. I mean, right now, the Pentagon is training more drone pilots than, you know, actual plane pilots, you know, manned plane pilots. Now, given all these advantages, why do I and others across New York State oppose the Reaper? One reason is that the Reaper further distances not only military personnel, but citizens from the wars fought in our name and with our tax money. Canadian politician and academic Michael Ignatieff puts it this way, quote, "If war becomes unreal to the citizens of modern democracies, will they care enough to restrain and control the violence exercised in their name?" Unquote. Ignatieff goes on to ask, "Will citizens of modern democracies restrain and control the violence if they and their sons and daughters are spared the hazards of combat?" Unquote. Such distancing makes mission drift oh so easy. Already, Reapers have been used for deadly missions in Yemen and Somalia. The Reaper is difficult to detect and track. So far, it's mostly been used in remote areas where media scrutiny is scanty. Hence, civilian casualty figures are hard to come by. But here, to give you an idea of the scale of the casualties, are some stats from one country, Pakistan. In 2007, there was only one drone attack, but it killed 20 human beings. In 2008, there were 19 attacks that killed 156 human beings. In 2009, my numbers got screwed up here. Anyway, in 2009, there were 46 attacks that killed 536 human beings. In the first 7 months of 2010, there were 41 attacks in Pakistan that killed 366 human beings. In other words, each year there are more Reaper attacks and more victims. Few pilots have any real knowledge of their victims, or their culture, or motivation, or circumstances. Few have adequate grounding in the legal implications of their actions. While they are essential topics, tonight I'm not even going into the legality and immorality of how the Pentagon and the CIA use the Reaper. Despite their ignorance, those piloting the Reaper often play investigator, prosecutor, jury, judge, and executioner. They make life and death decisions. They get to play God. Not the best role models for spreading democracy, for spreading our Christian way of life. All of this is happening under the Obama administration. All this has been accelerating under the Obama administration. Curiously, a major portion of this bloodshed is happening in Pakistan, with whom we're not even at war. It is such distancing, along with the CIA black operations, that make mission drift oh so easy. The Reaper, this Pentagon toy, is likely to get us into a heap of trouble. But who among us will know? Who will care? What the voters and taxpayers and letters to the editor writers and university researchers here need to realize is that while the Reaper is tactically clever, it is strategically stupid. In Pakistan, the CIA, with no judicial process, with no judicial safeguards, uses the Reaper to assassinate those it considers the enemy, alleged Taliban and Al-Qaeda operatives. Never mind the so-called collateral damage. Unfortunately, because so much of what passes for intelligence is dubious, even spurious, especially in remote regions where few U.S. personnel speak the local language or know the local culture, it often happens that the targets are mistaken. And so, thanks to these flailing and trigger-happy manhunts, many innocents are maimed or killed or have their homes destroyed. Thousands are displaced and forced to flee the region. These refugees and the friends and relatives of the victims surely have long memories. Quite likely, they'll remain hostile to the U.S. for years to come. In places like Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, the Pentagon tells us we're engaged in anti-insurgency warfare. And an important element of anti-insurgency warfare is winning hearts and minds. What could more quickly undermine the strategy of winning hearts and minds than the kind of terrorism that the Reaper perpetrates? This is what I mean when I say the Reaper is strategically stupid. There's no telling when the blowback will come home to roost, whether against U.S. military in the field or against U.S. personnel anywhere in the world. Possibly, one day, even in such burgeoning hubs of Reaper technology as upstate New York, which, after all, without any say-so from us, has become virtually an extension of the war zone. A couple of examples of the kind of blowback I'm thinking of. The first. Some of you might recognize the name of Faisal Shahzad, the handsome young man who a year ago tried to detonate a bomb in Times Square. This U.S. citizen who had visited Pakistan said he did what he did because he was so appalled by what the Reaper had done to so many people there. Second example, blowback. The physician turned suicide bomber in Pakistan who, along with himself, blew up a handful of U.S. soldiers and mercenaries whose job it was to launch Reapers. There's yet another form of blowback that is also menacing. In 1945, the new gee whiz technology was the atomic bomb. It too was rationalized as saving our boys' lives. Somehow, whether through racism or sadism or through the so-called fog of war, the deaths of 200,000 fairly defenseless Japanese civilians didn't count for much. With Hiroshima and then Nagasaki, the planet became a much less secure place for defenseless civilians, for all of us. As we know, within a few years, the bomb was no longer a U.S. monopoly. It spread to other nations, both friend and foe. Nowadays, there's the risk that unaccountable non-state actors, some nursing quite justifiable grudges, might somehow acquire nuclear technology. Given the volatility of nuclearized Pakistan, this is no mere hypothetical possibility. Ever since 1945, all sentient life on the planet, except maybe cockroaches, has lived under the nuclear sword of Damocles. Although admittedly the scale is different, there's a relevant parallel between nuclear proliferation and drone proliferation. The U.S., and not so incidentally Israel, are zealous pioneers of drone technology. According to Human Rights Watch investigations, Israeli drones slaughtered hundreds of civilians in Gaza a couple of years ago. At the moment, both the U.S. and Israel are at the cutting edge of drone technology. And both the U.S. and Israel are busy exporting drones. Like the atomic bomb, drones are now proliferating well beyond our borders, well beyond U.S. control. Over 40 nations, including Brazil, India, Russia, China, and Turkey, are now either importing drone technology or developing their own. I leave it to your imaginations to figure out whether such a situation is making this a safer world. I would argue that the drone menace isn't only external. The drone menace is internal, domestic. Drone technology is rapidly evolving in labs and on campuses throughout the U.S. While in the foregoing, I focus largely on the drone's killer aspect, its surveillance capabilities probably should be an even greater concern to us domestically. Imagine the drone deployed by a 1984 type national surveillance state. The kind of state that doesn't blush at passing so-called Patriot Acts, or that doesn't blush at holding alleged WikiLeaker private first class Bradley Manning in Abu Ghraib-like conditions in the Quantico Marine Brig. Already drones are being used for surveillance along the U.S.-Mexico and the U.S.-Canada borders. U.S. drones reportedly have been used for years over Mexico, supposedly for drug interdiction. According to the Syracuse Post-Standard, Hancock's commander, Colonel Kevin Bradley, envisions the Reaper being used here in the U.S. for law enforcement. Indeed, various U.S. police departments are already experimenting with surveillance drones. Senator Schumer seeks legislation enabling the Reaper to fly over the Adirondacks on practice missions, in which they will trail private vehicles. The Reaper is the wave of the future, not just over there, but here. What can be done about the Reaper in our midst? Unfortunately, the public is mostly ignorant of the Reaper and its implications. If you're concerned, I encourage you to read military analyst P.W. Singer's book, Wired for War: The Robotics Revolution and Conflict in the 21st Century. To understand how the CIA is using the Reaper in Pakistan, check out Jane Mayer's October 2009 New Yorker magazine article, The Predator War: What Are the Risks of the CIA's Covert Drone Program? Over in Syracuse, we demonstrate against the Reaper and the wars it helps perpetuate outside Hancock's main gate, twice a month on Tuesday afternoons at shift change, around 4:15, 4:30. From Buffalo, Ithaca, Binghamton, Albany, Brooklyn, and here in Rochester, people are all also organizing to expose and oppose the Reaper at Hancock. On Friday, April 22nd, folks from all over New York State will converge on Hancock's main gate to rally against the Reaper. Hundreds have attended the two earlier rallies. We expect this event to be at least as well attended. To learn more, check out the flyer, which I think has been distributed, or talk to Rochester activist Judy Bello. Judy, you just kind of raise your hand high so people can maybe seek you out afterward.
Also, there's Brian's at the table with a sign of
On Thursday, April 21st, the night before our rally at Hancock, the community is invited to a potluck dinner at St. Lucie's Gym on the near west side of Syracuse. Our keynote speaker that evening will be Kathy Kelly, a remarkably brave woman and powerful orator. Kathy has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize more than once. She is the founder of Voices in the Wilderness and Voices for Creative Nonviolence. In the last couple of years, she has made several visits to Afghanistan. There, Kathy meets with drone attack survivors, people who have become refugees as they fled the Reaper terrorism spewing from the skies. Please join us on April 21st and April 22nd. Now, in closing, if there's one thought that I would have you take away from my remarks tonight, it's this. Yes, the Reaper is tactically impressive, but strategically, in terms of human security, it's a real loser. Thank you.